Wisconsin is in Milwaukee at the State Republican Party Convention, visiting with Senator Ron Johnson. Senator, thanks for taking the time.
Well, Steve, happy to.
When do you think the Robert Mueller investigation will end, and how do you think it'll end? It's been going on now, as Vice President Pence said, for almost a year.
From my standpoint, it started way too soon. I'm sure it should be in operation now. What I wanted to see was the Senate Intel and the House Intelligence Committees complete their investigation, issue their report, and then we could have taken a look at what they had uncovered, uninhibited by a criminal investigation, and then we could determine whether a special counsel was actually needed or not. So what ends up happening, this is the history of the special counsel, this is no criticism toward any of them, but it's just sort of the nature of the beast is these special counsels, special prosecutors have a history of just going into all kinds of different directions, taking all kinds of time, diverting the American public's attention away from the enormous challenges that we always face, is about no matter when a special counsel or prosecutor were empowered. So I'm not a big fan of special counsels.
Do you believe the president when he says no collusion, this is a witch hunt, sir?
We haven't seen any evidence that he's not correct. The only collusion we've seen right now with Russia in terms of campaigns is the Democrat side in terms of funding the Steele dossier. But I keep telling people I'm talking to about this, it's like we've got a 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle. And, Robert Mueller probably has more pieces of the puzzle than we have in Congress. Congress has a pretty limited amount. We're starting to get some idea of, what that puzzle's about. But from my standpoint, the most important investigation is really congressional. When you're talking about these, political activities and, potential wrongdoing in there, from my standpoint, it's far more important that there's political accountability as opposed to a criminal prosecution, particularly when you get the criminal prosecutions all about the process. Will somebody completely honest and truthful with the investigators and the prosecutors?
What have you learned? Let me rephrase that. What has surprised you about the amount of Russian meddling with the robobots and everything in that 2016 election? And are we in a position to begin to ferret that out as we approach another election, sir?
Nothing surprised me about it. I'm chairman of the European Subcommittee. We were holding hearings for 2 years prior to the revelation of them meddling in our election. They're meddling in every election. So I just assumed that they're trying to do the same type of thing in America. And by the way, they were probably doing it past elections as well. They just didn't have a sophisticated operation using the internet. They have new tools nowadays versus what they used to have. So, we always have to be on guard for this. It's a serious problem, but I do want to calm everybody down. I don't believe our electoral system is in jeopardy. There's really only three ways that they can affect the election result. One is actually affecting the vote tally. Incredibly difficult to do in any major impact. First of all, voting machines are not connected to the internet. There are a number of controls, paper ballots, those types of things that really would prevent us from having a wrong vote tally. Then the next one would be access to voter files, which from my standpoint is probably more concerning. But again, if you're fooling around with the voter files, voters going into their polling place, they're going to know that and you can address it at that point in time. And then just basically producing a lack of confidence in the legitimacy of an election, and that we're doing to ourselves. So again, I really believe, and the Obama administration, I was one of the people briefed prior to the election, and the Obama administration back then, in September, was telling us we have evidence of Russian potential interference, we've got it under control, and we'd like you to go out, as members of Congress, we'd like you to go out and basically say the election will be legitimate, all's well. Now, I didn't do that because I heard about their attacks into potentially the voter files, and I wanted more evidence before I gave the all clear. But that was the Obama administration prior to the election. Something happened once Donald Trump got elected. And quite honestly, those are the things we're investigating.
How can Wisconsin voters know that what they encounter on the internet is not some Russian bot?
Well, you can't rely on anything as being the truth on the internet. I mean, you have to get multiple sources. You have to seek out reliable news outlets. And then you have to make your own evaluation. Does this seem too good to be true or too bad to be true? We need to be, you know, discerning consumers of information.
Gina Haspel, her pending confirmation as CIA director. You support it. Will she be confirmed?
Absolutely. I hope so. I know all of us are taking the confirmation very seriously. Going down in the secure briefing room, reading what is not publicly available, but they've declassified an awful lot of information that completely clear her of some of the charges and some of the concerns members of Congress had prior to those things being declassified. So she's a person of unbelievable experience. The outpouring of bipartisan support of people within the intel community certainly gives me a great deal of confidence, and certainly one of the major reasons I'm going to vote for a confirmation.
You have a lot of respect for Senator John McCain. Your reaction to that comment by the White House aide?
I have not heard the comment. I just heard about it in an earlier question and answer period with the news media. I have a great deal of respect for John McCain. I don't always agree with him, but I would never say anything that I thought would be hurtful or that would disrespect him.
You were asked on TMJ yesterday about whether to trust North Korea and their alleged willingness to give up their nukes. You have a great, you're a skeptic, correct?
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, listen, I think it's without doubt that President Trump's massive pressure campaign has brought Kim Jong-un to the negotiating table. We'll see if it's in good faith. It obviously produced the release of three hostages. That's a very good thing. That's something to celebrate. Certainly what I've been saying too is, and I've been telling President Trump privately and publicly, the number one priority of our relationship with China is to get them to cooperate to maintain the sanctions until we obtain the complete, verifiable, irreversible dismantlement of these programs. And that requires China to be totally on board, which they are for really the first time. They are really enforcing these sanctions because it's in their best interest. A nuclear Korean peninsula is not in their best interest. Proliferation throughout Asia is not in their best interest. So we share that common interest. And the only way we're going to get Kim Jong-un to give up these weapons is maintain that pressure until he's done so.
Was the president right to withdraw the United States from the deal with Iran?
I believe so. The world, the region was made less safe by that nuclear agreement. We funneled $100 billion plus into the largest state-sponsored terror. They applied some to their economy, but not enough because they have spontaneous protests by Iranian people. They're a little upset that they spent tens of billions destabilizing Yemen and Syria. Now we're seeing kind of a low-grade conflict between Iran and Israel in Syria because of the missiles and, you know, all the support that and the bases that Iran has set up in Syria. So it's the agreement itself that has made the world less safe. I think by withdrawing from it, we probably have a better chance, particularly with people like French President Macron, who said he's going to try and strengthen the deal.
I've covered your 2010 election, your 2016 re-election. I've seen your PowerPoints. You went to Washington to work on the deficit, which now stands at $21 trillion. What am I missing? Why?
Because there is not even close to enough members of Congress to pay any attention to it. You know, Steve, what do you think is the number one motivation of most members of Congress?
Re-election.
To get re-elected. So how do you get re-elected? Well, you promise people things. And as long as you can keep promising people things without consequence, and we've been keeping interest rate artificially low, so what we pay out in interest on the debt hasn't created a big enough crisis yet. We all know this can't go on forever. We saw the dramatic harm to our economy when the housing bubble burst. I think that will be mild in comparison to when the debt bubble burst, but nobody can predict it.
When does that debt bubble burst?
I can't tell you. As long as the U.S. is the world's reserve currency, as long as we can, in effect, print more money, and let's face it, the dollar is strengthening. You just cannot predict these things. Now, I've spoke to the chairman of the Federal Reserve, a couple of them. I don't really believe anybody truly understands or can predict the effect of monetary policy. So we just don't know, but we do know it's unsustainable, and we know the primary cause. You know, over the next 30 years, probably about $18 trillion more in benefits will be paid out of Social Security than you get in revenue. Our health care, including, you know, Medicare, probably about $38 trillion, the rest of the $128 trillion 30-year projected deficit. is interest on the debt, over $60 trillion. So if we don't want to pay $60 trillion to our creditors, we better seriously address the deficits in Social Security and our healthcare spending.
What major decisions does America face when that bubble bursts? What's it look like?
Well, nobody can predict. But what would certainly happen is what happened in Greece, where interest rates skyrocket. And that wouldn't just be for government lending. That would be for everybody. So it would be such a horrific economic downturn and loss of opportunity, loss of jobs. Our financial system relies on confidence. And when something dramatic like that hits, you lose all kinds of confidence. That in the 30s, that's what caused runs on the bank. It's what caused a severe recession after the housing bubble burst. We'd be well advised to pay attention to it, but not enough members are.
You also went to the Senate to act on health care. Have you made any progress in your X number of years in the Senate? Or is the health care system worse than when you went there in January 2011?
Premiums continue to skyrocket. In Tennessee, for example, this is while we were going through the debate, I saw a study for a 40-year-old male, premiums had quadrupled. And of course, three-quarters of that reason was because of covering pre-existing conditions, which we can do without canceling guaranteed issue by actually implementing policies like invisible high-risk pools like they have in Maine. So you actually have to be willing to tackle these problems, but covering people with pre-existing conditions is so popular, nobody in Congress, including Republicans, were willing to touch with a 10-foot pole. I was willing to touch it, but my colleagues in leadership were not. So we're not fixing the problem. So, Steve, you are zeroing on the two areas that I'm enormously disappointed that we have not been able to move the needle. It's not because I'm not speaking out about it. It's not because I want to do it. We just don't have leadership, and we just don't have enough members in Congress who are willing to do it. And let's face it, it's pretty unpopular tackling these big problems.
Well, you have said you're in what will be your second and final term. Do you have hope that when you leave the Senate, make progress on the debt and health care? Pessimistic.
Oh, right now I'm continuing to work, as we did when we failed on health care in the Senate. We continue to work with Lindsey Graham, Bill Cassidy, Dean Heller, and myself on the Graham Cassidy Heller Johnson block grant to the states. That initiative is not dead. We continue to work on that, hone the formula, work with outside groups. We just need to get 50 of our Republican colleagues comfortable with that, so we can show Leader McConnell that we can pass it as long as he brings up a budget that we can pass that gives us reconciliation instructions, because unfortunately we won't get any help from Democrats. They're happy to let the status quo continue to ruin people's lives. It's a very sad state of affairs, but that's just the truth.
Should President Trump tweet less?
I'm not a real fan of tweets. I tweet, but not personally. We tweet that through my communications department. I learned a long time ago, sometimes it's not the smartest thing to express immediately what you're thinking.
The president's defenders, like Kellyanne Conway, Anthony Scaramucci, said, "News media, Americans most care about our progress on international affairs, our progress with North Korea, and our nation's economy, and doesn't care about these personal situations with the president." Are you hearing that from Wisconsin residents?
Every individual's different. President Trump has a great deal of support, and I understand this because, let's face it, the mainstream media has been certainly not conservative. And so, as a candidate, now as president, he's not afraid to take on the media, unlike anybody who ever has before. So, having put up with the left-wing bias in the media for decades, conservatives are actually pretty happy he's done that. Some people are overjoyed with President Trump, and they can't get enough of the tweets. Other people are somewhat concerned, but they certainly appreciate the policy direction. I would put myself in that category. We have stopped overregulating the economy. We've made American tax system more competitive. We are showing strength within the world, and that is making dictators think twice and might give us an opportunity to ramp down the danger of both North Korea and Iran. So the proof will be in the pudding. And one thing about President Trump is he's more than willing to put it out there and be held accountable for it. Take a look at his pardons. Most presidents, including Bill Clinton, waited to pardon people to the very end of their administration so they can't be held accountable. President Trump is willing to make the pardons today and then let the voters hold them accountable. I actually think that's noteworthy.
And then final question, what's at stake in the elections on November 6th? You're not up, but control of the House, control of the Senate. What's at stake for America?
From my standpoint, it's really the difference between the parties. You've got Democrats who want to continue to grow government. Even though, as I've asked the question to tens of thousands of Wisconsinites and Americans, you think the federal government's efficient or effective? People laugh. I've maybe had a couple hundred people out of the tens and thousands actually raise their hand and think the federal government's efficient and effective. So Democrats want to grow that inefficient place. We want to limit it. We want to return governing authority back close to the governed. We want to protect people's individual liberty and freedom and a free market system that, through the test of time, has produced more prosperity, more opportunity for the greatest number of people than any other economic history. Democrats want to overregulate that, overtax that, and they do great harm to people's opportunity and prosperity.
Senator Ron Johnson, thanks for talking to Wisconsin.
Nice to see you again.
Have a good convention. Thank you.